Well, it's graduates night, and you know, I need to bring a special message to our graduates. I was going to make them sit right down front, take notes, and then I was going to give them a quiz later on to make sure that they got the message down, but Niue threatened to leave, so I didn't want to do that here. But Niue, I'm watching you. Don't you dare eat any of that candy while I'm preaching, and just make sure you don't there, all right? You know, years ago, three sons, after they graduated and they went out, they left home and they prospered. Getting back together, they discussed the gifts they were able to give to their elderly mother. The first said, "Well, I built a house for mother." That's pretty good. The second said, "I sent her a Mercedes with a driver." The third smiled and said, "I've got you both beat. You remember how mom enjoyed reading the Bible? And you know that she can't see very well, so I sent her a remarkable gift, a parrot that recites the entire Bible. It took the leaders of the church 12 years to teach him, but he can recite the entire Bible. He's one of a kind. Mama just has to name the chapter and verse, and the parrot recites it." It wasn't long after that that mom sent out letters of thanks to her boys. She wrote, "Milton," to her one son, "the house you built is so huge, I live only in one room, but I have to clean the whole house. Thanks." "Gerald," she wrote to another, "I'm too old to travel. I stay most of the time at home, so I rarely use the Mercedes, and the driver is so rude." "Dearest Donald," she wrote, "you have the good sense to know exactly what your mother likes. The chicken was delicious." Now, I think it was nice that all three of these boys were thinking of their mother and did something nice for them. But they did what they thought their mother would like. Actually, they were thinking of things that they loved and wanted. And many do the same thing with God these days. They look at this world and their life and they think of the things that they want to do. And they expect God to just like it too. When we come to graduation, we have to think about one of the things that goes on in our lives so quickly. Life goes by like a flash. Moses talked about it in Psalm 90. It's like a dream when it's past. It goes by so quick. And he tells us to number our days, we may apply our hearts unto wisdom. Pastor Jordan quoted these verses from Proverbs 3, 5, and 6, which are great verses. Many young people have taken these verses to be their life verses. And they're good verses. Verses that we all ought to pay attention to. Trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not into your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge him and he will direct thy paths. How quickly does life go by? Well, Johnny, it seems like yesterday you were in kindergarten. Do you remember anything about kindergarten? What? You were patient. Okay, so he does remember something about kindergarten. Niue, just yesteryear, you jumped into school there at Pensacola. Do you remember anything about your first year? You don't remember anything about that. I remember something about your first year. And, from time to time, I pick up my old college yearbook, and that was what one of my best friends said when he signed that yearbook. At my senior year, he says, "It seems like just yesterday we stepped out together on the soccer field." And life goes by so quickly. I didn't realize it how God was teaching me about how quickly life goes by when I was growing up. When I was 12 years old, there was a young girl in our church. She was 10 years old. And she went out one day to walk the dog in the winter, went down into the Genesee River, onto the ice, fell through, and her life ended like that. Age 10, She barely got started. Just a year or two later, one of my neighbors from down the street, we were a very small town, 900 people. One of my neighbor girls, she was 16 years old, Diane was her name. She was walking home fairly late at night, about 10:30. And a drunk driver swerved over on the other side of the road where she was walking on the edge of the road, on the correct side of the road. The driver from the right side went way over past the left lane onto the curb and struck her from behind and dragged her for 190 feet and killed her. My mother and father came and rushed to that emergency scene. And later on, my mother was telling me how distraught her parents were. 16 years old. My second year here at Berea Baptist, there was a tragedy that took place at the campus of Cleveland State University. A young man who was 20 years old, 6 foot six, a 240-pound health specimen. At the end of basketball practice, he was on the Cleveland State basketball team. At the end of practice, he collapsed on the floor and died of a heart attack. 20 years old, 10 years old, 16 years old, 20 years old. I could keep going with every name. One of the biggest shocks to our town when I was growing up was when I was in high school. And the last person to talk to this man, our coach, our soccer coach, Coach Vienna. He was 38 years old, and he called me in the summer one afternoon and wanted the doctor. The doctor was not there, and I was the last person to talk to Coach Vienna. He hung up the phone, he climbed up his stairs, went to his bedroom, laid on his bed, and died of a massive heart attack. Age 38. It's almost half my age now. Jesus himself accomplished all that he planned to do in his life in just 33 years. Never went to public school or graduated from a college or university as we know it. But he was the smartest and wisest man to ever live. And in his lifetime, he accomplished the greatest thing that anyone could ever accomplish. All of us have been given a precious treasure. It's called life. And graduation is a time when we think about the preparations that we've made to go out and launch our lives into this world. I'd like to just leave you with five important life lessons tonight as you can contemplate what it is for all of us. Some of you say it's too late for me. It's not too late for any of us to consider the time that we have remaining. I know that Solomon said, "Remember now thy Creator in the days of thy youth." But Moses was well over 100 years when he told us also to number our days. Teach us to number our days that we may apply our hearts unto wisdom. In the time remaining that all of us have, we need to number our days and think about it. Just how much time do we have, and what should we do with these lives that God has given to us? Five lessons. Number one is every life is valuable. Every life is valuable. When God says in 2 Peter 3:9 that he is not willing that any should perish, but that all should come to repentance, that means he cares about every human being. He cares about each one of you tonight. Every life is valuable. Now, there's a lot of people and things in our world that cheapen life. I remember when my father made that mission trip over to Bangladesh and up in the northern part where there was a hospital, he just felt like he came back. One of the things he said to me is that life over there is so cheap. He said, they see these young poor people and they're willing to throw lives away. They don't care about them. But with God, every life is valuable. Your life is valuable. God wants you to make the best of it. He's got a plan for you. What is it that cheapens life in our world today? Well, we know that abortionists that teach that you can take out life from the womb, that cheapens life, that devalues it. Years ago, Jack Kevorkian was known as Dr. Death. He's the one that really kind of especially pushed this whole concept of euthanasia and to end life. We've now got, I think, 5 or 6 states that have made laws that make it legal for people to take their own lives with physician-assisted suicide. They are cheapening life. The Hippocratic Oath of doctors was to give, and I'll never forget reading it, what my father had to swear to do when he became a doctor. You will swear that you will never take life, but that you will do all you can to preserve life. And now they're turning around and cheapening life and having even the medical world try to end it. Drug-infested neighborhoods cheapen life. Evil tyrants and groups out there that are terrorist groups, they cheapen life. And on we could go. Some cheapen or devalue life. But every life is valuable, and we should never forget that. A noted traveler years ago found 4 evaluations of persons in 4 different cities. And I think it helps us to just kind of get a picture sometimes of how we view life. 4 cities and 4 evaluations. The first one was the city of Boston, and the question was there, it's all about knowledge. How much does one know? Some of you know that in Boston we have some of the leading universities of the world are supposed to be there. Harvard is of course been under attack because of its craziness these days. But that has been a city that's been known for its knowledge for years. And so when he went to that city, he said it seemed that the most important issue in people's minds there was, how much does somebody know? And a person's life is valued based on how much they know. The second city he traveled to was Philadelphia, and there the question was posterity. Who is your father? Who are you related to? Who do you know? The third city he traveled to was New York. And that question was always, where does he come from? Everybody wants to come to New York, they thought. But the big question, if you're important, is where did you come from? Your location. And the fourth was the city of Chicago. And that was all about money. How much money does he have? People didn't care how much he knew. They didn't care what his father was. They didn't care where he came from. All they cared was, how much money does he have? And you can see how these evaluations are so important in the minds of people. When we look at somebody and we think about them, we start asking some of these questions, and we wonder these questions sometimes. And based on the answer for them, we might value their life based on what we hear about that or learn about them. Let me ask you an important question. And I want you to think about this for a second. What is the most valuable life in the social order? What is the most valuable life in the social order? When you consider, and you, if you ever read and study on the Holocaust and the German death camps and so on, they didn't treat life very important there. They didn't care how much you knew. They killed doctors and scientists as much as they did those that came from the slums. They didn't care who you were. To them, they had a value on them of to the social order. I want you to think about this. If we had to put this whole group here tonight, and we do a value, you know, from 1 to however many we got here, who would be the most important in this social order and why? How do you evaluate who's most important? Would we say it's the longest life, whoever's the oldest here? Pastor Bob, you're looking like you're doing good here tonight. I don't know if you're the oldest or not, but you know what? You'd be up there, and so, you know, we can put you up there. Is it the oldest? I'm understanding that that there's a young lady in United Kingdom by the name of Ethel Caterham, who is 115 years old. 115 years old. She was born August 21st, 1909. And she apparently is the oldest person on earth to our knowledge today. So is she the most important person on planet earth because of her age? Or is it the most famous person? Should we say that the most important person in the world is the most famous? Who would that be? Donald Trump? LeBron James? Cristiano Ronaldo? Those two were the two highest in the world. Cristiano Ronaldo and LeBron James. How many of you know who LeBron James is? I figured. How many of you know who Cristiano Ronaldo is? Niue, you're going to have to tell a lot of people who this is here, all right? This is the world's probably one of the most popular soccer players in the world. And because we're not one of them big soccer countries, you know, everybody else knows that name, but a lot of people in America don't know him. The most famous person. How about the richest person? You know who that is, don't you? Who is it, folks? Yeah, Elon Musk. $423 billion, poor guy. Is it the most talented? Who would that be? I started Googling some of these things to find out who the most this and most that is, and I couldn't find an answer on this one. How do you decide who's the most talented in the world? I mean, if you go to specialty issues, you know, the most talented musician or artist or architect or, you know, singer, I don't know, you know, America's Got Talent. How many of you have seen that before, right? But you know what? They put a lot of different talents out there, don't they? Some of the things that they do that are talents, I'm not so convinced it's really a talent. I mean, to me, that sounds pretty, it looks pretty silly and foolish, and some of them are just downright stupid. I mean, I don't call sword swallowing a talent. I call that stupidity. All right? But at any rate, they, you know, these most talented things. Is it the most talented that is the most valuable life? Is it the most intelligent? What's your IQ here tonight? I Googled that, and there was so much confusion about who's the most intelligent person in the world. But it seemed like one name continued to come up quite a bit, Christopher Michael Langan. Anybody heard that name? I hadn't heard him before this, so, but that's his name. And he was born in 1952. He's an American autodidactic with an IQ reported to be between 195 and 210. But they admit that IQ tests are highly unreliable at such levels. So they don't really know what his IQ is. But they describe him as the smartest man in America and as well as the smartest man in the world by the media. But then they started giving these other names. One kid graduated from college at age 11 with a PhD, excuse me, not just college, but with a university, a PhD at age 11. But you know, and a couple others did something like that, some of that. And you know what they all did once they did that? They all tried to hide from society because the world tried to make a big deal about it, and they felt terrible about it. They wanted to get away. One guy changed his name and went back to high school so that nobody would know him. And he did average as a student from that point on. But is that the most valuable life, the one that's got the highest IQ, the most intelligence? How about the one with the most toys? I mean, you ever seen a bumper sticker? The one with the most toys wins. But I think that it's the opposite. The one with the most toys loses, because when they die, they lose them all. Now, when I say toys, I'm not talking about Barbie dolls and Lego and stuff like that. I'm talking about the toys that people gather in their lives. You know, all the stuff that we need to get, the boats and the motorcycles and the houses and whatever else that, you know, what you want, video games, whatever. We got to get all that stuff. So is it the most toys, the person who has the most toys? That's the most valuable life? How about the one that is the healthiest or the strongest? Is that the most valuable life? How about the person that is the prettiest or most handsome? You know that I would win that one, wouldn't I? My wife is being strangely silent here. You know, we don't really know. You can't look at life. God doesn't look at those things and say, oh, that life is more valuable than that life. I think he sees every one of us equally valuable. And we need to recognize that my life and your life is extremely valuable to God. That's lesson number one. Every life is valuable. I don't think they still have it, but Cleveland Clinic came out with a great commercial a few years ago. And their slogan was, every life deserves world-class care. They don't give it, but I think they're right. Every life does deserve world-class care. Why? Because every person is that valuable to God. Every time you hear a siren, you think about the fact that somebody's life is in jeopardy. Somebody's life may be ready to end. And you must think about it, that it's my life that God has given that is valuable and is precious. Every life is valuable. That's lesson number one. Number two, every life has great potential. Every life has great potential. Not only is your life valuable to God, your life has great potential. You say, Pastor, you really don't know me very well. I don't need to know you. I know that God created you with a design to use you in a very special way. Your life has great potential. There's an interesting verse in Revelation 3 and verse 11. It says, hold fast that which thou hast, that no man take thy crown. That indicates to us, number one, that we can all receive rewards from God, and that our reward is going to be different from others, and that if you take care, you will receive that reward, and if you don't, that you can lose that reward. So it's true that every life has great potential. That doesn't mean that people actually achieve that great potential. In fact, I'm convinced that most people do not achieve that potential that God has created for us. Just consider this list of people that God used greatly in the Bible. You know these people. Just think about this list. A little slave girl in 2 Kings chapter 5 who told her master about this wonderful prophet that could heal leprosy, and Captain Naaman went there because of this little slave girl. God used this little girl. And she even got her life and story in the Bible. What an amazing thing. How about a little shepherd boy by the name of David? He was considered the runt of the family, the least possible, the last one that they would have ever thought could ever be king. But little shepherd boy, 17 years of old probably, took that slingshot and slew that great giant. We know that story. Let that story never become old or a silly child story. It's an amazing victory that God gave to somebody that said, I will do your will. He became probably Israel's greatest king until Christ. How about another little boy that was given up by his parents in the temple to serve. And he had to, at some point, make a decision. Am I going to do this or not? And he did. He followed through. And one day, he heard a voice. God was calling him. God was speaking to him. And he even had to be taught how to respond to that. And Eli, the priest, said to him, go back and say to the Lord, speak, Lord, for thy servant heareth. And Samuel did. He said, speak, Lord, I'm listening. How many of us need to be doing that tonight? How many of us do we need to be saying, speak, Lord, you got my ear, I'm listening. And Samuel became a great prophet for God. Young Daniel, another 17-year-old, a captive. He could have whined in disgust and suffering in the confines of slavery. He could have said, I don't like this place, and I'm sure he didn't like it. It's foreign country. He lost his parents. He's away from home. He's by himself. But he decided he's going to be faithful to God. And God used Daniel as a great man and a prophet to give us so much information. How about a couple of others that aren't in the Bible? Have you ever heard of a lady who was blind by the name of Fanny Crosby? Fanny Crosby was blind and was given up by a lot of people as useless. And they said, you know what? It was a day when blind people couldn't do much. She decided, you know what? I'm going to do what I can for God. And God used her mightily. She became the author of hundreds of poems and hymns, many of which we sing today. J. Hudson Taylor. He was a man that was considered as a nobody, and he slaved away in the land of India for years as a missionary in China. And Burma, he was up in Burma. A few years ago when we buried Lee Adams, Lee's oldest son, I believe it was, came to me after the funeral, and he was talking to me. He says, you wouldn't believe what I ran into where I live out in Syracuse, New York. And I said, well, what did you run into? He said, a group of people. He said, there was a church, an old mainline denominational church that died, and they closed it. And this group of people, when Bill Clinton allowed a lot of the refugees in, this group came from Burma, and they asked if they could buy this building, and they wanted to turn it into a church, and they did. They started up a church there. It's a Baptist church. And he said, I talked to them, and I said, well, where did you come from? Well, we came from Burma, and we're Baptists. He says, well, how did you become that? He says, well, we were all started through a guy by the name of J. Hudson Taylor. Have you ever heard of that name? J. Hudson Taylor started a ministry there that now is bringing missionaries over to America. How about that? God used that man mightily. David Livingston burned his life out for Christ in the jungles of Africa and has left a name and a legacy that will never be tarnished. In fact, one of the persons that he impacted was a guy by the name of William Haas. William Haas followed him back into Africa and was there even during World War I and started a ministry there that is known today as Baptist Mid-Missions. I'm reading the story about that today. It's an amazing story. And God has used these lives. And on we could go with a number of lives. Every life has great potential. Every life has great potential. And your life has great potential, which leads us to point number three. Every life has a plan given to by God. God has a plan for every life. He's got a plan for you and you and you and every one of us here. Every one of us, he has a plan for. He had a plan for Moses. He had a plan for Jeremiah. He had a plan for Daniel. He had a plan for the Apostle Paul. And he had a plan, he has a plan for you. Turn with me to Colossians chapter 1, if you would, for a second. Colossians chapter 1. This is the prayer that I pray often for many of you, and especially our young people. In Colossians 1 and verse 9, it says, for this cause we also, since the day we heard it, do not cease to pray for you and to desire that you might be filled with the knowledge of His will in all wisdom and spiritual understanding. I want you to know God's will. So that what'll happen, verse 10, so that you might walk worthy of the Lord unto all pleasing, being fruitful in every good work and increasing in the knowledge of God. So that you will find out His will and walk with God and obey His will and find out His plan for your life. God has a plan for every life. I am convinced that very few people find out the full plan that God has for them, because they often end up doing what they want to do and they get sidetracked. The devil gets them off their path, and sometimes they never get back on. When I was in high school, I had a very good friend. He was in our arch rival school, but he was a Christian. He was a pastor's kid. And so we would see each other in rallies like the Hebron youth rallies that we have here. And I would see him at those, and we played against each other in the championship soccer game, and I scored on him. He was the goalie. But we were good friends. And I'd talk to him frequently from time to time, and I said, "Come on, Nate, let's go to college together. Let's play soccer together instead of against each other in college." Because he was a Christian, and he said, "Yeah, let's do that." So we made plans together in that final months before. We were going to go to Bible college together, and about a month before it was time to go, I called him someday. We were going to get ready, making plans. I said, "Maybe we can even be roommates." But Nate says, "Well, I'm not sure I'm going to go now." I said, "What?" He says, "Oh, I found a job. It's really cool." I said, "What are you doing?" He says, I'm going on the road in this big truck. It's really cool on these 18-wheelers. And my brother-in-law is taking me out, and he's teaching me how to drive, and I can make a lot of money." I said, "Nate, we got to do this. You got to come back to college. And you know that you want to follow the Lord." And he didn't, though. His life took a turn. And for a long time, he was off the path. There's a young man that grew up in this area that had a similar situation to that. He started dating a young lady from this church. And he eventually went to Bible college. I met him in his freshman year at college. I was a senior. And I met him on the soccer field. He was all excited about what he was going to do. And he was full of life. He only lasted 1 year. And he went back and he got involved in some work here in the Cleveland area. Got away from God. And probably about 8 or 9, 10 years later, he showed up in my door one day and he says, "Can I talk to you?" In the meantime, he married this young gal from this church. He says, "I need to get my life right with God." His name is Robert Witte. Some of you may know him. And Rob got his heart right with God at that point. And I don't know how many times we've talked about that since then. He says, "I wished I'd never taken that detour." He says, "I wished I hadn't wasted those 10 to 15 years. I wished I had gotten on track and stayed with God." He says, "There's so much that wasted and so many scars from that time." God has a plan for every life. And He wants all of us to walk with Him and to follow Him and to be faithful. Number 4, life reaches its fullest potential when God's plan is discovered and followed. Life reaches its fullest potential when God's plan is discovered and followed. Now, if you're a Christian and you decide not to follow God's plan, you might be able to go and do something else, and God might allow you to do that. And you might be able to do some things good and have a fun time, and you may like it for a while. But you will never reach your fullest potential doing your own thing. You will only reach your fullest potential when you're following God's plan, doing what He wants you to do, living life the way He wants you to live it. So that requires us to discover God's plan. Go with me to Acts chapter 9 briefly. Here we have the story of the conversion of the Apostle Paul. Life can be miserable when you stray, because Proverbs 13:15 says, "The way of the transgressors is hard." You transgress and do your own thing, it's hard. Psalm 37:23 says, the steps of a good man are ordered by the Lord, and he delights in his way. He loves the fact that he's following God's will. And I can tell you, both of those are true in my life. In the days when I were trying to live life according to my plan, it was miserable and I was always in trouble. From the day that I turned my life over to God and said, your plan, your way, your place, whatever you want, I will do it. From that moment on, life couldn't be sweeter, and I've never looked back and I've never regretted it. George Truett said, what is the most valuable life in the social order? It's not the longest life, nor the most famous life, but one seeking to live in harmony with the will and the work of God. Such a man may never be heard of out of his tiny sphere, but he is the salt of the earth. He is the tonic of society. He is the lifeblood of civilization. The plain men and women building their homes, quietly rearing their children in honesty and piety, paying their debts, moving quietly and helpfully around to help their neighbors, seeking above all to know and to do the will of God. These are the lives that make the world a better place in which to live. These are the people who are standing in the gap for home, for country, and God. And so life reaches its fullest potential when you discover God's plan and follow it. Make your life count for eternity. God's plan involves you making a difference for eternity in some place, in some sphere of influence, in someone's life. You must stand in the gap for a child, a parent, a spouse, a neighbor. God has a plan to use you in this world. You must discover God's plan for your life. This is life's most noble task, most fulfilling task, and most rewarding task. So how do we discover God's plan? Quick outline here. Verses 5 through 6, Paul, we see, is on the road to Damascus, doing his own thing, and God comes along and knocks him off his high horse. Verse 3, it says, and as he journeyed, he came near Damascus, and suddenly there shone round about him a light from heaven. And he fell to the earth and heard a voice saying unto him, Saul, Saul, why persecutest thou me? And he said, who art thou, Lord? And the Lord said, I am Jesus, whom thou persecutest. It is hard for thee to kick against the goads. The first step in discovering God's plan is surrender. And I mean total surrender. It's the kind of surrender that I did when I was in the hospital waiting surgery after the 13th time my knee blew out. And it was at that time that I said, Lord, if I never play sports again, that's okay. If I never walk properly again, that's okay. I'm yours, and I'll do whatever you want. I'll be what you want me to be. I'll go where you want me to go. You have carte blanche in my life, and I meant it. That is total surrender. And that's what Paul is doing here. He says, Lord. When you say Lord, that's surrender. Who are you, Lord? You're the master of my life. And he says in verse 6, he said, trembling and astonished, he said, Lord, what wilt thou have me to do? And the Lord said unto him, arise and go into the city, and it shall be told thee what thou must do. So now he's seeking the Lord. What do you want me to do? It's surrender first, and then it is seeking and saying, Lord, what do you want me to do? Ask the Lord what? Then there's submission. Verse 7, and the men who journeyed with him stood speechless, hearing a voice, but seeing no man. And verse 8, and Saul arose from the earth, and when his eyes were opened, he saw no man, but they led him by the hand and brought him into Damascus. He did precisely what God told him to do, submitted to God's plan. And then there's a long period for Saul of supplication in verses 9 through 12. And he was 3 days without sight, and neither did eat nor drink. And there was a certain disciple at Damascus named Ananias, and to him said the Lord in a vision, Ananias, and he said, behold, I'm here. Verse 11, the Lord said unto him, arise and go into the street which is called Straight, and inquire in the house of Judas for one Saul of Tarsus, for behold, he prays. He prayeth. So what's going on for those days? Saul is there in that home, and he's praying, Lord, guide me. I want to know your will. I want to do your plan. supplication. And so he comes to him. And then we have spirit-filled counsel in verses 17 to 19. And Ananias went his way and entered into the house, and putting his hands on him, verse 17 says, "Brother Saul, the Lord, even Jesus, hath appeared unto me in the way as thou camest, hath sent me, that thou mightest receive thy sight and be filled with the Holy Spirit." And he guides this man. Spirit-filled counsel. That's how you discover God's plan. Anybody that really surrenders themselves to God's will and begins to pray and ask him for guidance and puts themselves in the counsel of other godly people will be guided into discovering God's plan. And so tonight, as we conclude this, I have one more life lesson. And I'm going to ask, go ahead and put it up if you would, Matt. Here it is. You only have one life. You only have one life. Give it over to the Lord. Make the best of it. Don't throw it away. You don't know how much time you have left. Most of us have passed the 10-year age, the 16-year age, the 20-year age, even the 38-year age. We don't know how much time we have left. But we only have one life. It will soon be passed. Only what's done for Christ will last. So I leave you with this poem. And this is the poem, and you graduates will find this poem in your Bible. It was written by a pastor of this church who's been here for many years. But he wrote this poem way back in 1996, and here's what it says. I watched a man go out one day to launch his life along the way. He had no teacher, guide, or friend, but simply followed every trend. His course grew twisted, hard and rough, and soon his soul had had enough. But on he sailed with heavy heart, just wishing for another start. The trends played havoc on his soul and wrecked his life upon the shoal. Such cruel, agonizing pay when he had simply come to play. Another man set out that day and launched his life along the way. He had a teacher, guide, and friend to warn him of the evil trend. His course went forward straight and true. Success with satisfaction grew. So on he sailed with happy heart and thankful from the very start. He kept his eyes upon the Lord, rejected trends, and read God's word. At last he sailed to heaven's shore, rejoicing thence forevermore. May God help all of us as we sail upon the ocean of life to be careful, to recognize only one life. It will be soon be passed. Let's give it all to the Lord and make it last and be blessed. Our congratulations to you grads. We wish you the very best. I was preaching not just to you tonight, because in case you couldn't tell, I was preaching to all of us. And may all of us learn, because sometimes, even though we graduated from some school, we haven't graduated from the ultimate school of hard knocks, or the school that God is still teaching us in. May we all become graduates and follow God and serve Him with our lives.